Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for October 2nd, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. Happy to be here with you on this October 2nd. I know that a lot of people around me here in Southwest Florida may not be able to be with you as the storm Hurricane Ian ravaged this area. For those of you who don't know, I am located in Naples, and if you watched any news over the last few days, you probably saw Naples and Cape Coral and Fort Myers, which is just north of us here, on the news quite a bit. And unbelievable damage that took place in this area. Luckily, we were able to avoid any substantial damage. Wednesday, the storm came, and we are far enough inland to where we got some heavy winds, we got some rain, and that was really about it. And in fact, if you went out Thursday morning as we did and walked around our neighborhood, you would not have even known a storm came through. There was very minimal even damage to trees and shrubbery. So we do consider ourselves lucky. I know people that I work with, fellow teachers, who've lost everything. And it's going to take a long time to clean up and rebuild certain areas of this part of Florida. So again, on this day in particular, very thankful to be able to be with you. We were in a situation where we never even lost power, to be honest, and we lost internet from probably 3 p.m. Wednesday till about 5 p.m. on Thursday. So, you know, we thank our lucky stars that it was not worse, but we do know and acknowledge those who suffered far worse than we did. And, you know, are thinking about them certainly as we move forward with our days here in Southwest Florida. Tonight on Wrestling Night in America, we are going to preview Bound for Glory and Extreme Rules, the two big shows we have coming up next weekend. Now, Bound for Glory is on Friday night from Albany, New York. Extreme Rules takes place on Saturday night. So that means we will be here with you on Wrestling Night in America next Saturday night. After Extreme Rules goes off the air, we will be here taking your phone calls and emails about both Bound for Glory and Extreme Rules. So if you're an Impact Wrestling fan and you watch that pay-per-view, you can call in Saturday night or send us an email during the show, and we will get to it on our Saturday Night Wrestling Night in America. That is next weekend here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. For tonight, you can call in 515-605-9345. If you're listening live and you've got something to say about either one of those two cards, you can also email us, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. And if we're talking Impact Wrestling, if we're breaking down an upcoming pay-per-view, you better believe that I've got Darren Lilly with me here tonight. Darren, you are my go-to guy for everything Impact Wrestling. Thank you so much for taking your time out and joining me tonight. Hello, Darren. Are you there?
Hello.
Hello,
can you
Darren.
Hear me now? How's it going?
I gotcha.
Sorry
it's,
about
it's
that.
It's going good, man.
Much better now. Yes, I have muted myself. Sorry. Oh, glad to be here. Glad to hear that you're doing well and didn't get any damage. My thoughts are certainly with the people who did experience damage. That looked, you know, very devastating. Of course, saw it on the news and everything. Glad that you're all right. But let's, you know, I'm glad to talk a little wrestling this week. I'm glad you're having me on. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And I should say, it's not just those of us in Southwest Florida, Central Florida, Northeastern Florida, up to the, you know, Southeastern states that got it as well. This was a turned out to be a very major hurricane. So, you know, all those that were affected truly by this. But yes, they're in Bound for Glory, Albany, New York, this Friday night. So let's get into things here with this show. And by the way, you know, no worries for muting yourself. That is always my biggest fear, that somehow I've muted my mic. And because I always start the show by myself and like am talking for like 2 or 3 minutes before I bring my co-host on, like I'm afraid that during that time, like I'm not going to know that I'm on mute until I go to my co-host and they don't say anything. So he actually made me a little nervous for myself there, Darren, that I had myself muted and I'm like, oh, maybe he doesn't hear me.
Wow. I hate to go through that. That's scary.
Yeah, it is. It is. But anyway, we're all good. We're all good here. So that's a cool. That's a positive. Okay.
Awesome.
Bound for Glory. Let's start with the Call Your Shot Gauntlet. This is a 20-person intergender battle royal gauntlet rules, so it's like a Royal Rumble intervals. Wrestlers come out. The winner can cash in for a title shot of their choosing at some point in the future. So far, those who have been announced, and of course there is one episode of Impact on Thursday night before Bound for Glory on Friday, you have PCO, Rich Swann, Giselle Shaw, Heath, Bhupinder Gujar, Bobby Fish, Moose, Steve Macklin, and Sami Callihan. Now, you know, the names obviously that stand up to me are Moose, Macklin, and Callihan. They were involved at Victory Road in a big match on that show. And, you know, kind of surprising that they're only in the gauntlet match and that they don't have a match to themselves in some combination on this Bound for Glory show. But on the other hand, you do need to fill the Battle Royal with wrestlers who you believe can not only win the match, but also successfully cash in a title shot. And you don't have a lot of that outside of Moose, Macklin, and Callihan. And I also want to mention Bobby Fish, who made his debut at the Impact Plus event, the Victory Road, last week. And so he is no longer in AEW. This is not an AEW deal where they're borrowing him, sort of like Frankie Kazarian later in the show. But rather, you know, he is in Impact Wrestling. And so that's a pretty big get for Impact. You know, talk a little bit about Bobby Fish, what you think he can bring to Impact, and is it Moose, Macklin, and Callihan, or do you see a winner outside of one of them for this match?
Well, first with the Bobby Fish situation, he's a good, solid veteran. The fans really reacted to him well when he showed up at Victory Road. That was probably the best reaction he probably ever received in his career, I could imagine. People were really into him, so I could see Impact running with him a little bit. I mean, good veteran presence, always has good matches. No wonder, you know, what you might think about him, but I think he's a good addition. Not sure if he's going to win this one. This one, there's some pretty big names in the Call Your Shot Gauntlet match. As you mentioned, Moose, Macklin being most prominent, Sami Callihan, of course. I could see them going with Steve Macklin because they're really seeming like they're behind him. He got the big victory at Victory Road in the three-way barbed wire match. Rich Swann maybe has an outside chance. They haven't really focused on him. He's kind of been in the background. It would be a good way to bring him up. But I'm going to pick PCO because I think there's a lot of storyline possibilities with PCO winning because he already has the dissension with Eddie Edwards and I Don't Know More. And I think that would create a little bit of jealousy. They want that opportunity from him and he might not necessarily want to give that up. So that's who I'm picking for it.
Yeah, PCO is an interesting name. You know, he's been berated by Honor No More week after week for not holding up his end, losing matches. But they haven't broken ties with him yet. And so it almost looks like, what are they waiting for? Are you waiting for, like, that seminal moment for that to happen or a big moment for PCO? Or maybe he kind of tells the guys to stick it or somehow. But I like what you said about Steve Macklin because I was surprised that he won at Victory Road over Moose and Callihan in that three-way. Mm-hmm. And what better way to capitalize on that win than to win a match like this? And now all of a sudden you're a true title contender in a way that you might not have been before. You know, we see too often guys, you know, that we decry that 50-50 booking where somebody wins a big match. It seems like they're on their way to bigger things, and then in their next big opportunity, they lose. And so, you know, mm-hmm. you end up with 50-50. But if you want to stand out, if you really want to push Steve Macklin, and I don't think he's a bad guy to push in that role, having him win against Moose and Callahan and then having him come in and win this Battle Royal is a good way to do it.
Absolutely. Right. And it was certainly sent a message that we're getting behind him. He put him in a prominent storyline. It's a perfect way to do that. Establish his credibility, even on top of the Victory Road momentum. So that's a good choice. I think the worst choice would be to have Moose win it again and then challenge Alexander after the main event like last year. I hope they don't go that way.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, you just had Moose lose in the three-way. So if you were planning on having him win the Battle Royal, you know, if you have somebody who you're setting up to challenge for a title, even if it's not immediately, even if it's down the line, you want them to be in a position of strength. So you would want Moose then to win the three-way. And then, you know, it's sort of the same argument for Steve Macklin, I think, for that. Mm-hmm. But we'll move on to the Knockouts Tag Team title match, Chelsea Green and Deonna Purrazzo against Jessica and Taya Valkyrie. Jessica, the former Havoc, has much more of a happy-go-lucky personality these days, and much to the chagrin of Rosemary, who finally had enough this past week on Impact and gave them what for. Talk a little bit about Deonna Purrazzo. You know, I think people saw her as the star of the Knockouts division not that long ago. She was a long-reigning champion. I get that. You know, you want to freshen up the division, move people around, give other people opportunities. But what do you think about Deonna Purrazzo as one half of the Knockouts Tag Champions? On one hand, she's a champion and, you know, leading the Knockouts Tag Division. But on the other hand, the Knockouts Tag titles has never been really positioned as a really strong championship. So do you feel like they could be doing more with Deonna in this moment? Or do you like that she's sort of the flag bearer for that Knockouts Tag Team division?
I think she's the class of the division. Impact does this thing where they put, especially their long-term stars, they will sometimes put people on the back burner a bit, maybe just because they don't either have ideas or just because they want to freshen them up and not keep them constantly burn them out in the spotlight. So I think that's kind of what's happening with Deonna right now. It's a good spot, though, because, I mean, she's a tag team champion, so she's featured somewhat, and she's not totally all the way in the background. So it's good for her. I like the team with her and Chelsea. It's real good. And this is just a good storyline for her until they're ready to move her back up to the top, which I think I don't know what her contract status is, but eventually if she does sign with them, she should probably be back at the top of the card. So it's a good idea to just get people out of that mix and keep them fresh. I mean, they've done it with Moose, Callahan, those types who've been around for a long time. So kind of her turn for it. It's a little disappointing because I always like seeing her being featured and she had such a strong run, but I get it. What else were you going to do with her? She had run through everyone. So this is not a bad spot, but just background for now.
Yeah. I mentioned the Jessica storyline. What do you think of that? I mean, I think it's kind of it's a fine lower card to mid card Knockouts, you know, storyline. I don't think it's much more than that. But in a company and really in an industry where one of the main complaints for women's booking throughout the industry, whether it's WWE, Impact, or AEW, is you have your women's title feud and very little after that. So the fact that they're giving them something, and this coming on the heels of also Killer Kelly being introduced, she's not on this card. She may end up being in the Call Your Shot Gauntlet Battle Royal and a potential contender to win that match, by the way.
Sure.
But Killer Kelly has been, she's been introduced very strongly to the Impact audience. People will look at this storyline maybe and kind of roll their eyes, but look, they're giving some meaning to these characters.
Yeah, they're getting a lot of airtime with it, and Impact likes to flirt with the Undead Realm a lot, and this is bordering on that. They did a couple of skits a few weeks back just to introduce Jessica, and they kind of alluded to it on the last Impact show with Father James Mitchell. So I think this is where it's kind of headed. The match itself, I think, is kind of going to be in the background. I expect something to happen with the Jessica character, and that's going to be the focus of this match is what I think is going to happen. I think things are coming to a head, so something's going to happen with her, Taya, and Rosemary. We'll see what that is, but I don't think this is the focus will be on the match. It'll be on the outside activities is what I think is going to happen.
Speaking of introductions, and Darren, I would be remiss if I did not mention this, and I have nowhere else on this preview to mention this. And one person who also could possibly be in the Call Your Shot gauntlet is a person we've been seeing vignettes for the last 3 or 4 weeks on Impact Wrestling. His name is Joe Hendry. And if you have not seen these vignettes, you need to look them up, because Darren, I think this falls into the so bad it's good category. In fact, it may be the dictionary definition of the phrase so bad it's good. These Joe Hendry yeah. vignettes with the song, I mean, I don't even know how to properly describe them to listeners who have not seen them yet. So maybe you want to take a shot at that. Maybe you just want to leave it as a mystery for the listeners to go look up on their own. But these Joe Hendry vignettes, this is I'm loving them. I'm loving them. I don't know. Am I wrong here?
They are so out of left field. I'm at a loss for words to describe them. When they come, they always come out of a commercial break and go to these skits. I keep asking myself, is this part of the show? What is happening here? Is this a commercial? What's going on? These weird scenarios, and out of nowhere, Joe Hendry, and he's using the music that he used in Ring of Honor, because he did some back and forth with Dalton Castle, and he worked that song into it. And so that if you're familiar with that, that song is back, and it is the goofiest song you can possibly imagine. So, yes, I expect Joe Hendry to come up at some point, and probably out of nowhere, if the skits are any indication. But, yes, Greg said, go check these out for yourself. They're so off the wall. It's incredible.
Yes, I had to fit that in here, Darren, somewhere. And this is I knew if I had it on my mind for whatever reason. I think it was because I mentioned the Killer Kelly vignettes in her introduction, mm-hmm. and that made me think of Joe Hendry. And I knew that if I didn't mention it right now while it was the top of mind, that I was going to potentially forget about it. And I would not be able to live with myself if I had not brought those vignettes up to you here on the show. But let's go back to Bound for Glory.
Sure.
Mike Bailey versus Kazarian, X Division Championship match. Kazarian on loan from AEW here, obviously has a long history in Impact Wrestling back in its TNA days, especially in the X Division. So a little bit of a different challenge for Mike Bailey here. You know, he's had his share of really good matches in Impact Wrestling as X Division champion, as a challenger to that title. And I think that Kazarian, you know, he's not as good as he once was, but maybe he's good once as he ever was. And this is the match to pull it out against, because Mike Bailey is, you know, going to bring it. And so this may not be the X Division title opener that we become accustomed to on Impact pay-per-views, where they just go flying for 10 minutes. Kazarian may bring a little slower pace just simply because of his age. But I think this is a really cool potential stepping stone for Mike Bailey to go out there and to really perform at a high level against one of the fathers of the X Division, one of the people who was around nearly at its inception and who's legacy is tied to the X Division.
Exactly, yeah. Frankie, Impact does a good job of nodding to nostalgia and everything, and this is perfect. Because Frankie, yeah, he's a step slower, but he can still go. So he can represent the old school Impact going against Bailey, who definitely represents the present for Impact. And he's been on a roll, but this will be a different type of match, where the fast-paced ones that he's had recently, including against Delirious and Victory Road, this is going to be a whole different style. And Frankie can still go. I mean, it's not going to be slow and plodding by any means, but it'll be good. It'll be more technically, on the mat and stuff like that. And they'll exchange probably some high flying, but a different kind of mat for Bailey. And it'll be interesting to see how he reacts to that, because I haven't seen like his whole history or anything, but in Impact, it's mostly been the fast paced stuff. So it'll be interesting to see him slow down a bit and see what he's got, how he reacts.
Mia Yim takes on Mickey James. Mickey is doing a storyline where if she loses a match, she will retire, which should sound familiar. It was the storyline of Ric Flair's retirement in WWE. And I like Mia Yim here. Mia's got some credibility. She's a babyface. You know, so it's going to be a – it's not a match where – you know, Mickey is, it's not a grudge match or anything like that. It's just, you know, Mickey trying to survive and Mia Yim trying to kind of use Mickey and potentially retiring a legend like Mickey as a stepping stone to rise up the ranks in the Knockouts division in Impact. And I think Mia is the right level of opponent at this time for Mickey James, who's wrestled some lower card wrestlers on Impact over the past few weeks. So what do you think about that? Is Mia the right opponent here for Mickey, or would you rather have seen someone maybe higher on the card for Mickey to have to get through here on pay-per-view?
I love what the options they had available. I think this is the perfect fit. She's right at that level of good competition, but it's somebody who could afford a loss if Mia were to lose, which I think is going to happen because the last rodeo storyline is just getting going, and I don't think it would be kind of abrupt to cut it off right now. Mia is certainly tough, and somebody I think is on their top tier of the Knockouts division, but she's somebody that could afford to lose to Mickey. So it's a good opponent. It's going to be a good match. I think it's appropriate for Bound for Glory, a marquee opponent for Mickey James on the last rodeo storyline. So, yeah, it's a good matchup for me. Looking forward to it.
Where do you think this Mickey James storyline ends? Obviously, it ends with her losing and retiring. But what is the lead up to that? You know, does she lose in a challenge for the Knockouts title? Does she actually win the Knockouts title? And when she loses the title, her career is over? Like, how do you see that playing out and the end game for this?
I never thought about that. I just think that it's going to go all the way to at least her getting a title shot. I would not be surprised to see her actually win the Knockouts title. After that, I don't know if they're going to drop the last rodeo aspect, maybe forget it or make her turn heel or something to get out of it perhaps. But I think she's absolutely winning the belt. I just have a feeling about that. But I think it's going to go a little bit longer, maybe towards 2023, past that a little bit. I'm not sure if the storyline will expire by then, but I think it's got some legs left in it. So we're going to see her in that title match at some point.
Interesting. Impact tag titles. Taven and Bennett against the Motor City Machine Guns. Gosh, you know, the Honor No More story is still going. Still, you know, I thought maybe when they won the opportunity to be a part of the Impact roster, no strings attached, that, you know, maybe they'd even go their separate ways and they'd get involved in other storylines, that Honor No More was just kind of a way to get their foot in the door of Impact Wrestling. And yet this faction has stayed together and is still going strong. And Taven and Bennett are the champions. Motor City Machine Guns challenging here. You know, going to be a good match. But what do you think of Honor No More as a storyline, as a faction? Do you think that when they became a part of the Impact roster, they lost some of what they were fighting for and has been kind of floundering? Or do you see them still as a strong group?
It's definitely been hit and miss throughout all this, but when they won the match to join the Impact roster, it was like, yeah, it did lose a little bit of luster. It's like, okay, they're here now, so what's going on? This is one I expect to go at least a little bit longer until they have probably the you must disband match stipulation match or something like that. With that said, when everyone goes their separate ways, I hope they keep Taven and Bennett together because they have always been a solid team, and I'm glad to see them as champions here. With that said, I think the Motor City Machine Guns are absolutely on fire. They might be at their peak. They've been really good on this Impact run. Again, not sure of their contract status. I have not heard one way or the other, but if they're sticking around, it's definitely time to pull the trigger on letting them win the belts. One thing Impact does is they know they had pretty good timing for the most part, about when to pull the trigger on things. And I think this is the perfect time to give the guns the belt. We'll see what happens.
Jordynne Grace versus Masha Slamovich in an Impact Knockouts title match. We had both of these women choosing the other's opponents. Grace at the Against All Odds show, and Slamovich had to face Allie Catch at Impact this past week, as chosen by Jordynne Grace. So, you know, Masha Slamovich is another knockout who they brought in, sort of like Killer Kelly. They brought in really strong, and I feel like they worked her in very well. Like, it's not like they introduced her and then automatically gave her a title shot. They introduced her, they worked her up the card, and it does, to me anyway, feel like the right time for her to get a title shot. Do you see her losing here? Like, is she someone who, because of her upward trajectory, can she afford a loss here, or do you see her going over Jordynne Grace?
I think that they've done such a good job of building her up as a challenger. I think she has to take the title here, because if she loses, I think that takes away her credibility. Grace has been a good champion and certainly one of our most popular stars, but they did such a good job of building up Masha. I think it would be the wrong move to have her go ahead and lose here, because I don't see anything else for her on the horizon. And I think she'd have a solid title reign. You could always do a rematch, which would be intriguing as well. They did such an excellent job. And as you pointed out, doing the same with Killer Kelly. So maybe those two on a collision course down the road, perhaps, which would certainly be a draw with the way they're building both of them up. But, yeah, I think you got to go with Masha here.
Okay. And then finally, the main event, or the presumed main event, Josh Alexander against Eddie Edwards for the Impact title. Bound for Glory is always one of Impact's marquee shows, along with Slammiversary. So I think you look at it, even for a company that only does 4 pay-per-views a year now, pay-per-views a year now, the Impact Plus shows kind of get me all they confuse me a little bit when I'm thinking of how many pay-per-views Impact has, because I'm like, no, is that a pay-per-view or is that an Impact Plus? No, that's okay. So you want your main event to be a really strong one for a show like Bound for Glory. This certainly feels strong. Eddie Edwards has been the leader of Honor No More for quite a while. A match with Josh Alexander is going to be a good match. And I think, you know, perhaps the most important thing is I think Eddie Edwards could pull out a victory here. And that's a belief that you need fans to have in order to sell them on the show, sell them on the main event, is you need to believe that that title is in jeopardy, whether it's the babyface or the heel as the champion. And I think they've done a nice job making you think that Eddie Edwards legitimately could win this here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of intrigue, which is exactly what you want on your main event, because I could see Eddie winning it. I think Josh is going to win it, but it could go either way. They did a really – I don't know if people watched the TV show last week, but there was a lengthy promo segment between Honor No More and Josh Alexander, and Eddie was, of course, leading Honor No More. And they really defined the mission statement for both wrestlers going into the main event of their biggest show of the year. Eddie Edwards is looking more for control to get back at Impact for what he perceived they did wrong to him. And Josh Alexander is wrestling because he wants to be known as the best wrestler in the world. So they both had that strong mission statement, and which one of them is going to come through? And that's the whole intrigue of the match, and they really added another layer to it. Very well done. So we'll see what happens come Friday.
Yeah, it's the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid. Give each guy a mission statement and, you know, let that sell the match. And I think, like you said, they've done a really nice job with that. That is Bound for Glory, Friday night, Impact Wrestling pay-per-view from Albany, New York. And again, if you are an Impact fan, you watch the show, you can call us up Saturday night when we go on the air after Extreme Rules and talk about Bound for Glory as well. Or send us an email if you're watching Bound for Glory and, you know, you can't call in Saturday night. You can email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. We've reached the bottom of the hour here. This is Wrestling Night in America for October 2nd, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, joined by PWTorch.com contributor Darren Lilly, previewing the Bound for Glory card as well as Extreme Rules and taking your phone calls and emails. 515-605-9345 and WNIALivecast@gmail.com, respectively. So let's go to our first phone call of the evening. This is the 615 area code. This is Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Greg, it's good to be on. Like I said, I wanted to say what you talked about at the beginning. Just I'm glad that, you know, you didn't have a lot of damage, and I'm, you know, we're praying for obviously everybody that did, and, you know, kind of it humbles you in that moment, you know, seeing a lot of the pictures and everything going on. So I wanted to say that, and I'm glad you're good. And Darren, two nights out of three, man, this is awesome, man. How are you, sir? Good to talk to you again.
I'm doing great. Good to hear from you again. What a streak we're on.
On a huge streak. And Greg, I mean, if Trevor doesn't turn the ball over five times, you guys win again. So, unfortunately, I know it's tough to see that. But I like Trevor. I'm still backing him. I'm still going for him. He's still my guy. I still like him. So, you know, it's just a bad day at the office. You know, one of those things. And my Packers had to struggle just to beat the Patriots today in overtime. So I was just glad they got out of there with a win. So I was happy about that. But, Darren, I forgot, are you like a football guy at all? I forgot. I was just wondering. I forgot.
I did see the Packers game today. I thought they were about to lose that one, but I guess you guys lucked out.
We did. Well, I wanted to just go on. I mean, I know you know, already brought it up in some of the preview, but, and again, I haven't, you know, got to watch. I told Darren Friday, I'm just keeping up with his, you know, reports on it, and you keep, and Greg, you talking about it a little bit. You know, just going back to Deonna, I mean, you know, like you said, I'm definitely happy, you know, she's in a tag team, and I'm glad they've, like you were saying, it's not that I think they're just biding their time, like you guys were saying with her, because I was a little worried at first. I was kind of, you know, looking at your reports there, and I wouldn't see her for a little while. And you know, of course, that's kind of part of it. You know, she's not going to be on every show, and that's a good thing. But I was kind of like, oh, man, what's going to happen? Like, are they just going to just kind of lower down for, you know, a long, long period of time? And then I saw what she got with Chelsea, which, you know, obviously they're best friends in real life, and now they're tag team champions, which I think is good, but and kind of going back to what I brought up a while back, like, do you think when they do bring her back, because, again, we have to realize that she did lose to Mickey twice. And, again, I'm all for Mickey James. Like, I've loved Mickey James for a long time. She's a really good wrestler. She's a really good – her character's always been good other than certain areas in WWE. But I like – she did lose to her twice, and I still didn't like that. But do you think – when she does get pushed back up, whenever that might be, do you still, the guys think that, both of you guys, do you think she'll stay heel for, you know, quite a while until they just kind of find a way to, because I think ultimately, like I said, I think her big time impact run should be as a babyface. Because again, I think she's a better babyface, even though she's been a really good heel. You know, the times I've seen her on here, I really like her as a heel, but I think she's a better babyface. What do you guys think about all that?
Let me jump in here. I think that Deonna has far surpassed my expectations of her as a heel. And I do agree. I think she can be a great babyface. She has the look of a babyface. I think she's got that that humble promo style that could really come through as a babyface. Even though she's really done a nice job tweaking that for her heel persona. I think that at some point, you know, babyface Deonna is going to be a good move. But she is just doing so well as a heel, you almost hate to turn her and make it feel like it's being rushed. So, Darren, go ahead and jump in with your thoughts.
It's an intriguing thought to have her as a face. I hadn't even considered that because she does such a great job as a heel with the mannerisms, and her whole style is, you know, doing the submissions and that kind of thing. But that would certainly have some legs and extend her. But I think she is the star of the knockout division. So as soon as they conclude the tag team thing, maybe she'll, I don't know, split up with Chelsea or something like that as the impetus for a babyface role. That would be interesting. But I think as soon as we wrap up this tag team stuff, we're going to see her ascend back to the top. And she has some opponents ready-made, like Killer Kelly, for instance. If they get Tasha Steelz off the back burner, they could go back at it again. So yeah, there's some possibilities going on. I just wonder if they de-emphasized her. I know she has a wedding coming up, so maybe that's why she hasn't been on like the latest set of tapings. Like last week, she wasn't on, so I don't know if that had anything to do with it. I know she had like a bachelorette party according to her social media, so maybe she got de-emphasized for that, and they're just allowing her a little time to get that done and then get back in the title picture or whatever. So we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, that's somebody that you want to feature, and we'll see a lot more of her, I'm sure.
All right, Sean, back to you for your second question or comment for us.
Yeah, and that kind of leads me back to, you know, with the Mickey and Mia Yim match. Again, I haven't seen, and so, you know, I think the lose and you retire match is a cool touch, but going back to where I was going with Mickey and when she had beaten Deonna twice, which I do think hurt Deonna a little bit, I just think when you've brought Mia up and the way she came out of WWE and comes on Impact, kind of fired up, a really hot baby face with where Impact's going, I just worry if losing to Mickey, yes, I mean, she could get her win back or get a win and get heated up, but I just don't really, really big match on a big Impact pay-per-view, having her lose, it just kind of worries me a little bit. What do you guys think of that Impact? And like, who do you guys think will, I mean, I know, Darren, you said Mickey probably will win. Like, Greg, who do you think should win and who do you think will win?
Well, just based on the fact that Mickie James has to retire if she loses, I don't see a way where she can lose here to Mia Yim. You know, the storyline is really just starting. I think I agree with Darren that it's going to extend quite a bit longer and even potentially involve the Impact Knockouts title. So I think, you know, the fact that it's Mickie James, sort of a legend in Impact Wrestling and in wrestling, period, and the fact that this is a storyline where if Mickey loses, she retires, I don't think there are a lot of people going in expecting Mia to win. So I think that's going to soften the blow for the loss. And I think that if she performs well and if she has a really good match, that's actually going to help her more than hurt her. You know, if this had been just a Mickey James versus Mia Yim match, no stipulations attached, I think it could be the right time for Mia to get a big victory over someone the stature of Mickey James. But, Darren, with the stipulation such as it is, I just don't see it happening.
Right, and I have to agree with that. But I have to agree with Sean. They have to be really careful because Mia going forward is somebody that I think that they need to feature on top. So they have to be worried about her credibility in this. So maybe they'll go the outside interference route. That's always an option. I know she had a little thing going with Kenny King, where they had some exchanges in the gauntlet match, and before that there was like a backstage exchange between them. So that's one direction they could go in where Kenny King interferes and that kind of alleviates, you know, it gives her an out. So you can always play that card. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, Sean, back to you for your final question or comment for us.
All right, I guess I'll go back to the WWE realm. Let's kind of talk about, I'm excited about, I'm very pumped for the Riddle-Rollins, you know, rematch. I think they've done a really good job. And I mean, they've kind of, I guess it's been cold a little bit the last couple of weeks because they haven't really done a whole lot to talk about it. And Monday, obviously, they'll probably do a lot more to heat it up. But I love what they've done. And I really think, you know, again, I think Riddle has to win just because he's so, I mean, I think they're on the route to doing some really big things with him. So what do you guys think they might do Monday? And do you think Riddle just, you know, kind of has to win because they're doing some really good things with him? And kind of where do you think Rollins, even if he does lose, you know, where do you think Seth might go from here? That's all I had. Greg, I appreciate you, man. Like I said, I'm glad you're good. Always good to, you know, thanks for having me on as always. And Darren, it's always good to talk to you, man. Thank you guys for taking my call.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah, the Riddle Rollins thing is interesting. They've been able to keep this pretty heated, you know, and it's felt a little bit back burner-ish over the last perhaps few, I don't know, weeks. But, you know, when you go back to Clash at the Castle and Seth Rollins gets the victory, and, you know, going into that show, we talked about, boy, you know, neither of these guys can really afford a loss. Rollins gets the victory. This is the fight pit match, and it was announced today that Daniel Cormier would be the special guest referee. So I really think Riddle wins here. I think he's got to win. I think Rollins has gotten a lot of the heat in this feud, and I think it's time for Riddle to win. He's basically has a home court advantage here in the fight pit, so if he doesn't win, it's really a tough loss for him. So if he wins, I think it gives Rollins an out that he's outside of his environment in the match structure of this type. So I think this is really the time for Riddle to win, and I also realize I'm arguing for 50-50 booking, so don't even try to come at me about that. But, Darren, you know, this is a situation where, I mean, it could all depend. You know, Rollins is a guy who's been bandied about as a potential opponent for Roman Reigns again down the line here as we head into WrestleMania.
Right.
So, you know, that it could kind of depend on that. If that's the case, maybe they want Rollins to be as strong as he can. So how do you see this Riddle-Rollins fight pit match at Extreme Rules going?
It's a tough one because Rollins has sure lost a lot this match. He lost 3 in a row to Cody, and I think I'm forgetting another loss. But, yeah, but if you're going to do something with Riddle, this is the time to do it. As you pointed out, this is his type of match, the fight pit. It's time for him to win, and it looks like they're making him a little more serious. They could lose the scooter, by the way, but it's ridiculous. But to give him a little more credibility, he's got to win here. You brought in Daniel Cormier from UFC, and I don't think you would bring him in to raise a hand of a heel also, so there's that little bit of aspect. So I think we're looking at Riddle winning, which I think is the right move here. And Seth is so good in the ring, it's not going to hurt his credibility that much. He can absorb that loss, even if they were to be grooming him for something with Roman Reigns down the line. I don't think it would hurt him too much.
Yeah, I agree. Let's look at the Extreme Rules card then. Sean dovetails us right into Extreme Rules. We talked about Riddle and Rollins, the fight pit match. Let's talk about the good old-fashioned Donnybrook match, the second ever of its kind. We saw one on SmackDown a month or two ago. This is a six-man tag, and I use the word tag loosely because for those who don't know, a good old-fashioned Donnybrook match is basically an Extreme Rules match, a no-rules match. Sheamus, Ridge Holland, and Butch against Gunther, Ludwig Kaiser, and Giovanni Vinci. So, I think we're going to get another Sheamus-Gunther singles match out of this. I don't think we're done with that match. So I'm not sure when, not sure where, but I think we do get another singles match between those two. But this is a match. You have some really good workers in this match. I'm not sure how it'll work in this environment where it's kind of Extreme Rules. And it's a little, you know, it's not about, you know, inside the ropes or bell to bell or anything like that. It's more of a... It's more of a fight, and so I'm not sure how this is going to develop, but looking forward to it because, you know, Sheamus has done a really nice job turning himself babyface in this feud, so I give him props for that. What's your take on what we could see in this good old-fashioned Donnybrook match, Darren?
I'm looking forward to it. I think that's going to be pretty exciting, but you mentioned Sheamus against Gunther. If I'm not mistaken, that's the featured match on the Friday Night SmackDown, the season premiere, if I'm not mistaken. So their rematch is happening Friday, the day before this.
See, I knew it. I knew they were going to have a rematch. What did I say? I thought it into existence, I guess. No, I watched SmackDown on the DVR, and I fast-forwarded through the previews for the upcoming show. So I missed that if they had it on the show or if they announced it somewhere else.
Gotcha.
But,
they did advertise it.
Yeah,
so,
you know,
yeah, and I didn't blame you.
It doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like a crown jewel match. It doesn't feel like a Survivor Series match, although, you know, maybe it should be. It's only one man's going to survive that match again. So I think, you know, knowing how well received it was at Clash of the Castle, using it on free TV to bump up the season premiere ratings, I think it's probably a smart move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good move. It's something that people want to see, and it's going to create a little bit of buzz, so that's good. And headed in towards Saturday, where all six of them will be fighting. I spent a while brawl and people really be into it. So yeah, I would have preferred that the singles match be on the pay-per-view and you save the Donnybrook match for SmackDown, but that's not the way it played out. I know that ratings are important for SmackDown, so I can see why they did it, but both matches will be very good. So we'll be fine either way.
You do worry about too many on a show like Extreme Rules, and we kind of joke about how WWE, you know, gives several different names to the same basic match type, and then you see it over and over again, and it doesn't feel as special on the single show. But, you know, Liv Morgan, Ronda Rousey is an Extreme Rules match, and then there's this good old-fashioned Donnybrook match, which is a little different because it's going to be a six-man tag, so there's different iterations involved there. But, you know, the rest of the matches on the show – they're going to be stipulations and extreme stipulations, but not necessarily like this. So I think it's okay in this context then to have a match where it's, you know, an Extreme Rules match without being called an Extreme Rules match, even though you have Morgan versus Rousey that have a similar match type.
Right. Yeah, you might be overdoing a little bit, and then the strap match will probably be somewhat along those lines. I mean, I'm sure it's a little bit different, but same theme. So it could be kind of repetitive going in, but they got a good enough talent mix where hopefully that won't be the case.
Right. Edge versus Finn Balor, I quit match. Dominic Mysterio, I think, has been doing some of the best work of his career as a heel. with Rhea Ripley.
A low bar.
Well, fair enough. Yes, I would say so. But nevertheless, I'm going to give him credit. Credit where credit's due. He has some unique chemistry with Rhea Ripley, and the Edge versus Balor is kind of a match where you're almost looking at it for what's going to end up going on outside the ring. You can imagine a scenario where Rey Mysterio gets involved, and then you can imagine a scenario where Damian Priest or Rhea Ripley or Dominic get involved. The I quit stipulation is interesting. Do they do something? Yeah, their Edge has been famous for being written off TV for lengths of time during his return. Do they do something where he has to quit and get written off TV for a while or whatever the case may be? I don't know. But it should be a good match. Edge and Finn Balor are very good. I think if it was a regular match, you know, you could certainly bank on it being 3, 3.5, maybe even 4 stars. I'm not sure if Edge can consistently reach that since his return. But with the I quit stipulation, we've seen where that's kind of brought matches down a little bit because you have to interrupt the flow of it to ask if somebody quits. You have people in holds for longer periods of time trying to get them to quit. So it's a little bit of a different animal than what you would get in a straight-up Edge versus Balor match where you could kind of, you know, guarantee that certain match quality.
Right, and they're billing this as the first time they've ever wrestled, so it's a little bit disappointing. I would just like to see them in a straight-up match just to see how what happens there, but you put in the I quit stipulation, and that does change an aspect of it a bit. So, I mean, but they're both two top pros, so it will probably still be very good, just different than what the regular one-on-one match would be. There's going to be plenty of interference, I'm sure. And you might even see, like, AJ Styles come out, Rey Mysterio, and that will add a little bit to it. Could turn out to be the second Donnybrook match of the night, for all we know. We'll see how it goes.
For sure. Yes, definitely. Drew McIntyre versus Karrion Kross in a strap match. And this is one of those undercard matches, perhaps the rare undercard matches, that I feel has been built really well. You know, say what you will about Karrion Kross and his character and his ability inside the ring, but they have made Drew McIntyre versus Kross seem very special and seem like a very big match for a match that doesn't really have a title involved in it. So talk a little bit about what your expectations are for this match. And, you know, you would have almost expected if they were going to do this match at Extreme Rules that Kross would have played a bigger part in costing McIntyre his match at Clash at the Castle. And realistically, he was kind of a red herring in that match, just at ringside throwing water on McIntyre early in the match, but didn't play a part beyond that. So that's an interesting aside leading up to this match. But, I mean, how do you think – do you agree that McIntyre and Kross has been built pretty well at this point?
I think it's been a solid build. There's a build to it. There's some intrigue in it. We talked a little bit about it on the Torch Pulse show on Friday night. There's intrigue about who's going to win this one. They seem to be – Triple H seems to be behind Karrion Kross, and I'm not necessarily sure that the fans are wanting to see more of him, but we're getting them. The other side of that is that Drew McIntyre is somebody that's usually protected that they could use for future title matches. And since Roman isn't there on a consistent basis, he's sometimes the top guy on SmackDown. So do you want him losing to Karrion Kross, a guy who a lot of the fans are unsure about? I think Karrion Kross has to win this, though, just to have any kind of credibility. And I don't think it will hurt Drew that much in the long run. That you can use the strap match as an out. You can always use outside interference. Is this the night that there's a white rabbit reveal? Will that play into it? Who knows? I doubt it's going to happen at Extreme Rules. But we still have some time to a couple of episodes to go, so maybe they will allude to it. But I'm seeing Karrion Kross winning this.
Yeah, that's interesting because Drew, you know, was on top of the world heading into Clash at the Castle. He'd gotten this giant push as a babyface to where people, and myself included, actually thought there was potential for him to knock off Roman Reigns at Clash at the Castle. Mm-hmm. Now, after that loss, and we're talking about potentially losing again here to Karrion Kross, and all of a sudden the bloom feels like it's off the rose a little bit for McIntyre, although, you know, you argue perhaps successfully that McIntyre can afford the loss, but you know you don't want to, and then WWE has had this problem, you don't want to take for granted your top baby faces, because I think it's a lot easier to get someone over as a heel than it is to get someone over to a increasingly fickle crowd as a strong baby face. So when you have someone that is a strong baby face, you want to work to keep them at that level. And that means, you know, whether WWE wants to admit it or not, winning matches matters. And that's something that's going to keep him as a strong baby face.
Yeah, if Drew loses this one, it's two big losses in a row, and perception is everything in WWE, and so you might start losing that fan support. It's like, oh, Drew's done. You know, we can't get behind him anymore. He's, you know, losing to Karrion Kross and losing his big match that he was supposed to win, in the fans' mind, I guess. So, yeah, they had to be very careful about that, how to handle the ending of this match.
We had two more matches to go, both women's title matches, but let's go back to the phones. With the 305 area code, it is DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
I guess we can start with the WWE. going into, like, different things, like I've been watching and noticing, like, Triple H is doing, like, weird different things. I don't know if you guys noticed this. Like, the fireball was kind of crazy. He's never done that and messed up. And, like, other, like, weird setup things. I don't know if you guys are noticing, but, like, I don't like this new stuff. Like, he's trying. Like, I like his old, you know, Vince McMahon way, like, when he was doing the first NXT stuff. I thought, like, this is not... You know, don't follow what the other people are doing on the other side. They're doing fireballs. All of a sudden, he's doing fireballs. What? I don't know if you guys noticed this, but, like, at the end of the day, hopefully, like, when, I don't know, the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, do you think that he'll change his ways and go back to NXT old school? Or do you think that going forward that he'll just keep on trying new crazy things until he gets where he, you know, into his pocket?
Well, the fireball thing is not new in the scope of professional wrestling. Certainly, it's something that WWE hasn't done in a while. But Triple H, you got to remember, is an old-school guy. I mean, he has studied the business. He grew up during the territory days. So he understands the power of a good fireball. and I think the thing you have to remember, too, about NXT, Darren, is NXT, and I think Triple H is smart enough to understand this, and he may have even said this on occasion, NXT was geared toward a very small niche audience, and he booked for that very small niche audience. He is now in charge of creative for the WWE main roster, which reaches a larger portion of the fan base, which reaches fans who want a variety of different things out of their wrestling, not just the small slice who wanted something very specific out of NXT. So I think it's very hard to book a main roster because you're trying to be all things to all people. But the fact that he's doing it differently, and I would say more successfully perhaps even than Vince McMahon had been doing of late, I think speaks well to Triple H. You know, he is trying different things, like DJ said. Not all of them are going to work, but I applaud him for trying because what had been on TV under Vince just wasn't working. So, you know, I'm willing to take a few L's with things, whether it's the fireball not working. I applaud the effort and I applaud the creativity to bring that back. But again, not everything is going to work, but he understands that you can't book main roster like you booked NXT, as well received as that was. Darren, talk a little bit about, you know, DJ's comments there about Triple H.
Yeah, well, you know, Triple H is still trying to find his way a bit on the main roster. Obviously, he had an extended time at NXT, but the main roster is still kind of new to him with him, like, totally in control. So you're going to see, you know, bigger things like big stunts and flashy things like the throwing of the fire and the tipping over the ring, that kind of thing at SummerSlam. I wouldn't be surprised to see bigger stunts like that because it is a main roster. So going forward, I would not be surprised to see those kind of elements continue. But you will also see a lot more logic and less emphasis on, like, the stupid things that, you know, Vince would have, like, people throwing up and that kind of stuff. So that stuff is being phased out in the weird wording and not saying the word wrestling on TV. So that will go along with the territory, too. And those little bits help, just not as much overall silliness. But I would think that you would see flashy stunts like that continuing. And that, again, that is something old school, going back to, like, the days of Memphis. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. DJ, back to you for your second question for us.
Yep, going to my second question of EAW. Same, going to be almost the same question. Tony Khan is, I don't know what he's doing, like, he's, like, throwing water on certain people and cooling them off when he should be, you know, bringing them hype and bringing them up, you know, like Lazaro. I don't know what he's doing with all these, you know, Jungle Boy, all these guys, you know. Like, I understand that, you know, what's going on with Wardlow because of, you know, what's going on. But, like, he cooled him down too. But, like, at the end of the day, he's, you know, he's not a good booker. And then now that MVPs are suspended and they don't come back, I just hope that they'll take them out of power and bring somebody who can book. It's like the girls division. It's horrible right now. Horrible. You saw what happened to that girl. She broke her nose. That was for nothing. That was a crazy move that they didn't need to do. It's just like the booking's horrible. I feel bad for these guys and why they want to leave. It's just like they brought them in to hype this company to bring money and bring fans, and this is what they're doing. Like, I don't get it.
I would disagree that Tony Khan's booking is horrible. I think there may be a situation where he's in a bit of a rut. You know, the baby faces like Wardlow, Jungle Boy, are perhaps not in a position where you would expect them to be at this point after some pretty big pushes. You know, nobody's going to remove Tony Khan, but Tony Khan, he is the owner and the booker. So,
I mean, like,
you know,
not Tony Khan, everybody else under him.
You mean on the, like, the
producers? Yeah, like,
I mean,
you know, like
the
Omega is doing the females. Like, I think they should take him out of power and bring somebody else in. I mean, look how the
big
looking hard.
I don't know. I think it would take probably a pretty strong decrease in ratings or a, dip in pay-per-view buys for that to happen. I think right now that's not the situation, so I would be surprised if you saw that happen. But yeah, you know, it's hard to book a wrestling company week to week, and Tony Khan is experiencing it. And we've seen some really good AEW shows. We've seen some okay AEW shows. I don't think, Darren, that AEW TV has been as up and down as WWE is. Like, when WWE shows are good, they're pretty good. And when they're bad, they're really bad. And I don't get that sense watching AEW, because even if you don't like the booking, there's always one or two matches on every Dynamite that are, like, four stars. So you can at least say, man, at least we got a really good match. you know, even if you don't like the booking or what have you. So that's sort of the saving grace for AEW in some ways with people who are unhappy with Tony Khan's booking. But, you know, how do you assess Tony Khan's booking and the positioning of certain stars in AEW right now, Darren?
I think it's solid. I can understand DJ's frustration. You mentioned Cesaro.
Yes.
I think that he lost
like
the belt to Jericho.
A year-old man who's getting the title of ROH. Come on. Like, Cesaro, they brought him to push him.
Right, and I get what you're saying, but Jericho adds a little bit of credibility. Sure, he's polarizing to some people, but that name brings in ratings and it'll bring attention to the angle for Ring of Honor. So in the long run, it's probably a good idea. Doesn't mean that Cesaro's being pushed to the back. He still can be made to look strong. Just because people lose in AEW doesn't mean, you know, they get de-emphasized. It's just not their turn in the storyline. Same with Jungle Boy. I think this is just part of his journey that he's, you know, getting the beatings from Luchasaurus and Christian. But I think it's part of just the evolution of the storyline. I think he'll get his comeback here. He's being featured. He's on TV most weeks. Had a really good match with Phoenix a couple weeks ago. So he's still being featured. And he actually won that match, if I'm not mistaken. And same with Wardlow. I think he was supposed to start something with Samoa Joe, but Samoa Joe might have had a travel issue with the hurricane. So we'll see what happens with Wardlow. But again, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt and let them see how it plays out. And as far as the women's division, I think we're at a reset point kind of with Soraya coming in. So I'll also, you know, take a look at that as well.
All right, DJ, back to you for your third and final question for us tonight.
Yeah, that's what I was going to go into. I'm confused on what he just brought up, like Soraya and then like that Britta Muda. Like they're bringing in kind of like weird people. Like I don't know if you ever – okay – watch the match, right, with Buddy and him. And when Muda came up, he didn't know what to do. He just stood there, like, for a minute, like, what do I do? Like, this guy, Buddy, he was in the WWE. He knows what to do. I don't understand why they don't want to hurt this guy, but don't bring him in then. Like, at least, you know, Buddy, or it doesn't make any sense. Or Soraya. They know that she couldn't wrestle with that, so they couldn't touch her. It's just like, dude, why bring these guys in when they can't do anything? I understand the pop, but bring them in for the pay-per-views, not just for, you know, when we're trying to bring up people. You know what I mean?
You know, Muda's in his retirement tour, so I'm sure Tony Khan, as a wrestling fan, thought it would be cool to bring him in. He has a long history with Sting, dating back to some of the matches they had in the NWA. So, you know, that's it. That's as simple as it is. It doesn't have to be more than that. They're not putting Great Muda over. He's not winning matches or anything like that. It was just a nice surprise for the fans and a cool moment for people who recognize the history between Great Muda and Sting. Soraya, I get the criticism. I think they want her to be sort of a mouthpiece for the women's division, Darren, and to sort of, I don't know, the enforcer almost for the women's division, since it doesn't seem like she's ready to compete in the ring. But I don't feel like her mission statement came off very well. I don't feel like, I'm just a little unsure of her role that they have her playing in AEW and what that's going to be going forward.
Yeah, that was kind of a mess last week, that promo segment. If they need to do to establish her mission statement to see and tell why she's there. I don't know if they can't announce her or what, but they need to tell, is she going to be like a manager? Is she the enforcer? Is she going to be in the ring? And we need to get to that and get to it soon so we can sort it out for people who might be confused about that. And if I could go back to DJ's comment about the Great Muda, I think he knew what he was doing. He was just pausing.
I was saying Buddy, like what, how like Buddy stopped and dropped the bat and he didn't know what he was doing. Like Buddy could have did something else. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like something cool. It was Muda. You know what I'm saying? It was just weird and awkward. If you go back and watch it.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying.
That's all I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? They could have done something so cool, but how it was is so awkward.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a little awkward, but, I mean, you know, I think people are willing to overlook that when you have the Great Muda as a surprise on AEW for, again, for the real Longtime fans who understand Muta's significance and things like that in the wrestling business. DJ, thank you for the phone call this week.
I think that I do think Shariah should be into. I think they should put her in, like, you know how JR comes out later. I really think they should put her in a booth.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think I wasn't overly impressed with her on commentary. I didn't get the sense maybe that she was as up on some of the women as she maybe should have been for that role. But, yeah, I don't know. It might be as she gets more comfortable, Darren, she might get more comfortable with a commentary role during women's matches.
Right. I don't think she did a great deal of that in WWE. So it's not the easiest thing in the world. So as I say, give her a little bit of time. She might excel at it. But as far as I know, that might have been her first time at it. Could be nerves, just getting, you know, getting some reps in. So we'll give her the benefit of the doubt. She's a good performer.
Sure. Back to the final two matches on the Extreme Rules card, Bianca Belair versus Bayley in a ladder match for the Raw Women's Championship. Bayley with a ladder match this close to coming back from an injury is kind of nerve-wracking for me as a fan. But, you know, hopefully she does very well. Belair in a ladder match scenario, I think, is going to be very good. In a one-on-one ladder match scenario, I think this will be a really good match. But we have this and Morgan versus Rousey in an Extreme Rules match for the SmackDown Women's title. What match do you think goes on last? I feel like it's going to be one of those two matches. But which one do you think goes on last as the main event?
I think because Ronda's the bigger star, that will probably go on last, and maybe they'll plan some big stunt to end the evening. Bianca, you know, within their universe is also big, but I think Ronda kind of trumps that. So, and I would suspect a title change, so you can end the show on a title change as well. Mm-hmm. So that would probably go last.
Back to Belair Bayley. Any concern for you having Bayley in a ladder match this soon after, you know, basically coming back to the ring from an injury?
Absolutely, yeah. I would not have done that because, you know, they could say they want to work a safer style. Once they get out there, you know, Bayley's going to want to put in an impressive performance. You can still do that without doing high risk stuff, but I just really worry about it. Bianca always puts on a great show, especially on the big time shows. She'll do well, and hopefully we'll protect Bayley. Because from herself, maybe, because I hope she doesn't go all out. That's, you know, could be a disaster.
And then we have Liv Morgan versus Ronda Rousey, Extreme Rules match for the SmackDown Women's title. There was some discussion last week when I had Frank Pettiani on about Liv Morgan and not coming across as a babyface with her attack on, I believe it was Lacey Evans after the match they had a couple weeks ago on SmackDown. And my impression was it was just Liv trying to show that she can be extreme. Because, you know, Liv Morgan's character to this point has been someone that is sort of lucked into where she is and sort of, you know, not the strong shooter that Ronda Rousey is. She's just sort of that undersized person who gets by on guile and things like that. And I think she wanted to show in preparation for an Extreme Rules match, in preparation for facing Ronda Rousey again, who she only beat, you know, by the fact that the referee didn't see her tapping. I believe it was at SummerSlam. So, you know, I think it was important for her as a character to show, hey, I'm not going to take this lying down. You know, I'm not a weakling. I'm not, you know, Ronda Rousey should fear me. That's kind of how I came across it, and I thought it was still within the realm of a babyface. But how do you think they booked Liv Morgan recently in anticipation for this matchup against Ronda Rousey?
I would agree with that assessment to some extent, but also she came out Friday, and she was the one who made the challenge to Ronda Rousey, and she brought a weapon with her and still got beaten up. And then after she got beaten and security took Ronda away, she attacked Ronda from behind, which is certainly not the work of a babyface. So I'm like, well, doesn't this prove she's a heel? Because I know there's been, you know, the back and forth with people saying, you know, what is she supposed to be? It's been very undefined, but I think that solidifies her as a heel. In my book, we'll see, but They've also kind of dropped the fluke aspect of her win. Obviously, both of those were flimsy wins that she has over Ronda, but they don't talk about that anymore the last couple of weeks. They're trying to imply that they were, like, legitimate wins from my perspective, and that's kind of weird because we know what we saw. But I think Ronda's winning this one, and I think that they'll try to build her up on the way to WrestleMania, and I think it starts with this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you almost think that has to be the case. You know, they're not going to keep Ronda Rousey around to keep losing title matches. You know, she's going
to
be the champion. And and you're not going to, you know, keep having her challenge month after month either. And you want her in a prominent position in terms of the title situation. So it does seem like there's a good chance of her winning here at Extreme Rules. So again, that is Extreme Rules, and we'll be going on the air with Wrestling Night in America next Saturday night. After Extreme Rules goes off the air, we'll be talking Impact's Bound for Glory from Friday night, as well as Saturday night's Extreme Rules, so I hope you'll join us then. Let's get back to the phones. It is the 814 area code. It is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's your first three-pack of questions for us?
I'm going to share who your prediction is for a surprise entrant in the gauntlet match at Impact Wrestling. I think it could be Tessa Blanchard returning, or Eugene doing his retirement tour, or even Hornswoggle maybe showing up.
Yeah, there was, I think, an advertisement for a surprise in the gauntlet, Darren. You know, when you're talking Impact Wrestling, it could be almost anyone. This is the company that brought back the Kiss Demon, for goodness sake. So I'm loath to actually make a guess here. Who knows? It could be the Great Muta. You know, he's been in Impact Wrestling before. I attended a pay-per-view in Miami where the Great Muta was on the card. I think it was a lockdown pay-per-view.
Wow.
So who knows? It could be him. I don't really have a good feeling for who a surprise might be. We kind of threw out some guys like Joe Hendry and stuff. I don't know that they would be constituting the kind of surprise that Impact is talking about. But, Darren, is there anyone you can think of as a potential surprise for the gauntlet?
I think you will see Swinger and Zicky Dice. They seem to like to throw them into these type of things, maybe to just get pinned quickly. I mean, I know that's not a huge sort of surprise. Tessa Blanchard, I just don't see that happening. And I don't think enough time has gone by between, you know, her, what happened there with her.
And I don't see her coming to lose anyway, like that, you know.
That too. but nobody stands out, but I think you definitely will see someone.
All right, Ryan, back to you for your second question.
Okay, second question is on the Fight Pit match. Has Cormier been doing any, like, training at the Performance Center to be a wrestler? You think he's just to stick to refereeing? Because I know when Ken Shamrock was the referee, it became a different career path for him.
Yeah, I feel like, I know Daniel Cormier has been a big wrestling fan for a while. I know there's been talk for years of him coming into WWE at some point. I don't know, Darren, if he's done any training at the Performance Center. It would surprise me if he's done some kind of training. I think his background, you know, he's been in the UFC, but I think his background is as a wrestler, like as a, that's his background. So, you know, that sort of amateur wrestling, you know, he's 43 years old and a lot of wear and tear from those MMA fights. So I'm not really sure how full time or what his future could be, but I think he'd be valuable if he was willing to come in for a couple matches. You know, they brought in Tyson Fury and guys like that. So, I think with Triple H, the door could be open for a guy like Cormier to come in and have a few matches, and who knows, it could develop out of his special refereeing stint on Saturday night.
Absolutely, and he certainly has a skill set that would translate to something like this, and obviously we've heard rumors of him being interested, and he's a big fan as well, has come to the shows and everything. I do see this, absolutely, this refereeing gig as being a gateway to Cormier coming in, maybe doing a couple of appearances. He has a gig as the UFC announcer, so I'm sure he's pretty busy. I'm not sure how much time he could devote to anything full-time, certainly, but to do something here and there, or, you know, one big match, I could see that, and this will probably be a gateway to that. I would not be surprised at all.
And Ryan, back to you for your third and final question for us.
Final question is, do you think we'll end up benefiting the most and the least from Triple H taking ever as creative? Do you think it's going to be Austin Theory having like a negative impact from Triple H, and maybe Karrion Kross having like the greatest impact from Triple H coming back, or is it somebody else?
Yeah. I think the greatest impacts are going to be the guys who Triple H specifically brought in who would not be in WWE without Vince McMahon. That would be Karrion Kross. That would be Johnny Gargano. That would be Candice LeRae, who debuted on Raw this past week. These are all people that Triple H was very close to. He liked them when they were in NXT with him. And so just by virtue of having a job in WWE, I guess you could say they're the biggest beneficiaries of Triple H's tenure as head of creative and talent relations. As far as not, I mean, I think Theory at first in the first couple of weeks was somebody you could point to, but now with Johnny Gargano coming back and having that ready-made storyline overlapping with what they did in NXT, I'm not sure I'd say that's the case anymore. Trying to think of who really has suffered from Triple H being in charge, or who was somebody that Vince McMahon really loved that Triple H maybe not, and strangely enough, that person could be Brock Lesnar. Like, I don't know if Triple H is going to go to that Brock Lesnar well as often as Vince McMahon did. You know, Vince and Lesnar had a very unique relationship. Lesnar had a very strong relationship with Vince, and I don't know that he's got that same kind of relationship with Triple H. You know, we saw him allegedly walk out of SmackDown when Vince was let go and when Triple H, you know, took over. So rough start to that relationship, and I don't know if Triple H is going to want to even rely on Lesnar as often as Vince McMahon did. So, Darren, do you see anyone booking-wise who has really fallen off the map since Triple H took over, or who might benefit the least from Triple H's booker?
Oh, my pick is almost, because I think he's being groomed to be the Braun Strowman. And I think that's going to be
right.
It for him.
Yeah, he's wrestled a few squashes, but now that Braun's back, it's like, you know, he can do a lot of the things almost can do and do them much better. So I think that's
right.
Definitely. If you start seeing MVP managing Braun Strowman, then if I'm almost, I start really getting worried. But that hasn't happened quite yet. Ryan, thank you for the phone call this week.
Yeah, thanks for taking it.
Let's stick with the phones and head to the 410 area code. It is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Thanks for taking the call, Greg and Darren. It's good to speak with you once again. I'm just going to be brief and to the point. I think that WWE has rushed many of these matches into placing them in the extreme division. For example, one would think that Bayley and Bianca would have a straight-up match before extending the ladder stipulation. The same with the I Quit match. You know, now, I understand it's Extreme Rules and you're trying to sell buys or get more views on Peacock, if you will. But at this point, they're backing themselves into a corner, because where do you go from here? You know, especially with Bayley and Bianca, what are your thoughts on all of these extreme stipulations? I know you alluded to it earlier, but it just seems like they are rushing now. I might say this, that I think Bayley still has a lot of ring rust. She's a step slower, and I think maybe they put the ladder match stick to protect her. Your thoughts?
Interesting. Yeah, that's sort of the opposite of what we were talking about earlier, where you wonder what kind of danger she's putting herself in with a recently reconstructed knee and putting her in a ladder match. But it also, Darren, prevents her from having to wrestle a straight-up one-on-one match with someone the level of Bianca Belair. You know, she can spend some time setting up ladder spots and doing things like that that could conceivably protect her as well. But the bigger point that Reverend Keith brought up about match stipulations not matching where they are in the feud, that's always been the case for Extreme Rules. It's been the case for Hell in a Cell pay-per-views, where you're having a match because that themed pay-per-view is coming up, not because any step in the story calls for it. So I think that's a very real complaint. I don't know if any of the matches really feel completely out of place. I think you mentioned, Darren, the I Quit match for Edge versus Balor kind of felt a little out of place for that. I get what Reverend Keith is saying, where a ladder match should probably be the second or third match in a feud rather than the first one. The nice part about it is at least Belair and Bayley have been feuding for a while, and it's not like, oh, they just started feuding 2 weeks ago and now it's a ladder match. So there's that too, where it might be the first match. Same goes for Drew McIntyre, Karrion Kross. It might be the first match in a feud, but they've been feuding for a while, even if they haven't tangled inside the ropes yet. So for me, Darren, that's the saving grace. But how big of a complaint is that for you, the way that the stipulations have met the moment in these feuds for Extreme Rules?
Oh, yeah. Reverend Keith brings up a great point, because they've had this issue for years where WWE tries to shoehorn these matches to fit the concept. The first thing that came to my mind was Hell in a Cell, because you would always have a Hell in a Cell match just out of nowhere, no matter what, just because it was time for it, because it was October or whatever month they usually fell in. And that's something that they need to work on. They might be better off just doing like one or two of these matches, like one or two extreme matches, and you could still have the theme. There's nothing wrong. It doesn't have to be a whole card full of those type of matches, because I always think that's overkill. So it's something that they might want to look at going forward under the Triple H reign to – something they need to tweak, definitely. That's always something that got on my nerves.
Back to you, Reverend Keith. Anything else you have for us tonight?
I also want to say I do suspect that Liv Morgan will be turning heel soon, and I'm glad that she has gone over to the dark side, because she was too much of a goody two-shoe babyface, and it's not believable, to say the least, to think that no matter how tainted her first two victories over Ronda might be, it's no way that she could be booked to beat Ronda Rousey a third time without her resorting to the dark side. She had to express this aggressiveness, and I like it. I mean, because I can see her feuding with some of the babyface women on the roster, maybe some ladies that they'll potentially call up from NXT, you know, once she does turn heel. Your thoughts?
Yeah, they do have a heel spot. You know, Shotzi just turned back babyface, so perhaps they can use Liv Morgan in that role that was previously occupied on the depth chart by Shotzi. But I think Reverend Keith is right. It's hard, even with them trying to go all in on Liv Morgan and her, you know, utilizing all of these extreme methods to try to go one up on Ronda Rousey. It does stretch credibility, Darren, that she could beat Ronda Rousey again. And so, you know, that may necessitate a heel turn, but it also depends on what they're going to do with Rousey. You know, is Rousey a heel or a babyface? Is she going to come out of Extreme Rules as a heel or a babyface? I think that's a question that also has to be answered.
Right. I think the primary concern for them is, what are we doing with Ronda, as opposed to what are we doing with Liv? They might be putting Liv on that journey to go as a heel, and she's done it before under the Riot Squad, so it's not unfamiliar territory. But I think they're fighting the tide here, because she's somebody that fans organically got behind, and that somebody they want to cheer. And as we kind of mentioned on the Friday post show, maybe not to that level of championship level, but that's somebody they like as a good mid-card underneath babyface. So I think that's her bread and butter, but, you know, she might surprise me with some heel work. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. Back to you, Reverend Keith, for anything else you have for us.
Shifting gears and still discussing the ladies. Over in AEW, we know that Saraya wasn't 100% in that promo, but hey, none of us are perfect. I do see a lot of potential in her moving the needle as far as the women's division. You know, I think that until she is fully medically cleared, that they should bring her on as like an advisor. I think she would be great in that role. She was good as a manager in WWE on SmackDown. So we'll see what happens. I would like to see them put more emphasis on the women in AEW, so maybe they can use Saraya to ignite the fire in with the women's division, give them longer matches, give them more stories to tell, not just the title stories or the title hunt. You know, have somebody feud with Willow Nightingale, have somebody feud with Sky Blue. It doesn't always have to be the same women getting all of the TV time. And speaking of Willow Nightingale, I thought her match on Rampage was pretty good with Jamie Hayter. We know the fans are clamoring to root for Jamie Hayter, and this was a good performance between both women. Give me your thoughts. Thanks for taking my call. Enjoy the shows this Friday and Saturday, and hopefully, if it's God's will, I'll talk to you next weekend.
Thank you, Reverend Keith. Always good to hear from you. I love Willow Nightingale. I think she's great as an undercard babyface who may get some shots here and there for the title. But Jamie Hayter, yeah, she putting her against Willow makes me kind of think that maybe a babyface turn still is a little bit off because Willow is obviously a pretty beloved babyface. But you know, Saraya and Reverend Keith kind of said, you know, until she gets cleared, she should have a certain role. I'm not sure if that's – I don't know what's in the cards for Saraya. I don't know if she's going to get cleared. I don't know what the expectation is for her in AEW in terms of do they expect her to enter the ring and enter competitive matches again? I'm not quite sure, which puts into question her role, I guess, as it currently stands. But, yeah, I think Jamie Hayter is going to be a big star. I don't know when they're planning on having her turn on Dr. Britt Baker, but they may want to pull that trigger sooner rather than later. But, yeah, go ahead, Darren, and comment on the everything Reverend Keith talked about from an AEW women's point of view.
Yeah, I would hope that AEW knows her status, or I don't know if it's in flux or whatever, but, I mean, the fact that they didn't answer it last week has me suspicious. But you've got to have something for her. She's somebody that the fans really have been clamoring to see and has a lot of support. You can make her a manager, or if you don't want to have her at ringside, just make her a backstage mentor for some of the younger talent, such as Reverend Keith mentioned, Willow or Sky Blue, and, like, do, you know, little segments where you can see them talking strategy or something like that. Or one intriguing possibility is have her maybe with Jamie Hayter once Jamie makes that turn and she needs somebody to rely on. I could see them having good chemistry and teaming up, you know, her going to Saraya for advice. Could also, you know, the commentary wasn't, as you said, the greatest last week, but with some practice, I'm sure she could excel at it. Or maybe even like a talk show segment, kind of like Miz TV, something like that. But as long as she has some kind of presence on TV, you can work on that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to one of our email questions for the week. And this is Big Picture WWE. We sort of talked about it with a question from Ryan when he asked about who benefited most. But this is from Jeff. He says, "Hello, Mr. Parks. I have a question for you. Since Triple H took over creative when Vince McMahon retired, what would you say has been the strongest and weakest aspects of the WWE programs that he oversees? Thank you." Good question. And I think enough time has passed, Darren, where we can really answer that question with fidelity. And I think the best thing to happen is those surprises. You know, it was overturned cars. It was cops in the background talking. It's the white rabbit stuff, whether or not you believe that it's going to be Bray Wyatt or that they should even invest in Bray Wyatt at this point in this way. I think those nice touches that were not done under Vince McMahon are a positive. I think bringing back Johnny Gargano is a good thing, and Candice LeRae to add depth to the women's division is a good thing. As you know, the longer matches, the emphasis on match quality is good. I think the negatives are I would question some of the guys he brought back. Karrion Kross, for example, I'm not sure. I think from a character point of view, he's hit or miss. I think it's even further on the miss side in terms of in-ring. You know, Braun Strowman, given the amount of money that would likely cost, I don't know if it would be worth that hit. So there have been a couple of personnel moves in terms of bringing people back or bringing people in that I question about Triple H. And, you know, there really isn't any other big, you know, the long matches have sort of drawn out some of the TV. So I think there's some good and bad in having long matches on television. But I would say it's mostly been good. I had to really strain to think of some of the bad stuff. But, Darren, I'll throw to you on what you think the best aspect of Triple H's booking has been since he took over and the one that still needs the most work.
As far as some of the strongest stuff, the in-ring product, as you say, the lengthier matches, focusing more on that, elimination of a lot of the silliness, even in the commentary, you can, it's actually listenable now, whereas I would just tune it out before. Michael Cole has improved. And then the stuff in the background where you have to pay attention because you might miss a QR code or you might see Nikki Cross arguing with Doudrop or something like that. So you have to pay attention, and I think that makes it a little bit stronger. My weak point is exactly what you said, some of the talent choices. Karrion Kross comes to mind, Hit Row, Strowman. Why has his name escaped me? You got feuding with Miz right now. The creepy guy.
Dexter Lumis.
Dexter Lumis, yes, exactly. Some of those talent choices, I don't know if people were necessarily clamoring for them to come back. Even though Strowman has got a great reaction, I mean, his upside, to me, is not great. Not someone I'd look forward to seeing, but we'll see. He certainly has some positives, but I would just work on those talent choices. Of who you want to feature with all that airtime.
I would say overall, big thumbs up, though, so far, especially
sure.
in comparison to
sure.
what we saw from Vince. You'd agree with that?
I would definitely agree with that, yes. It's much more watchable. Right. yeah, I was on the verge of just fast-forwarding through every show, but now I'll sit and watch a lot of it.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's still, like, 3-hour Raw is still too much, but it's a lot more bearable.
And then we will go to our final phone call to wrap things up for this evening. It's the 813 area code. 813, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Jeremy from Tampa. This guy has two questions. If Bray Wyatt does come back, do you see them pushing a feud of him and Cody Rhodes by SummerSlam next year?
I think that Bray Wyatt will be brought back in a very prominent position as a top star. And obviously Cody is going to be a top star. So I think it's not unreasonable to assume that they would tangle at some point in the future, Darren. I guess the one thing it does bring to mind, though, is we don't really know what Triple H's take yet is on the brand split. We've seen wrestlers since Triple H has taken over cross brands. It's been a very soft brand split. So
mm-hmm.
I think what we're kind of waiting on is a potential draft and how closely Triple H will follow that, if in fact there is a draft. And then you have to wonder, you know, Cody, is he on Raw? Bray, is he on SmackDown or vice versa? So they would have to end up on the same brand for that to happen. But if Triple H just does completely away with the brand split, or if they do end up on the same brand, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that Cody and Bray Wyatt could tangle here in the next year or so.
Definitely right, because they're both going to be on top, so that would not surprise me at all. But the thing they have to be careful about is how they book Bray Wyatt, if he's coming back as the same Fiend character, because people would come out of those feuds much weaker, and the Seth Rollins feud comes to mind, where he had to totally reset because it just got destroyed. Now, some of that is on the booking, and that aspect may change. People might have better insight with the new creative team, but they just have to be very careful about that, because you don't want to damage Cody. That's somebody that, you know, potentially could be your champion if they want to go that route. I wouldn't have any problem with that. So if you're going to feud those two, I would just be very careful about that. Look at history and don't let that repeat itself.
Yeah, for sure. And Jeremy, your second question for us tonight.
Oh, no, this is just a quick story. Back in 1991, me and DJ, who calls the show, we went to a Florida Championship Wrestling at Homestead Senior High School. Luna Vachon was on the card. She walked right past us, looked at us, lifted her leg, and ripped a fart. And said, "You like that, boys?" And she kept going. I just had to share that story. I'll let DJ tell it next time he calls it. But I love you guys.
Jeremy, thank you for the phone call. What a way to end the show, Darren. I bet when you accepted this invite earlier this week, you had no idea that's the way that this show was going to end, did you?
No, not at all. That's wow, that's not what I expected, but okay.
I actually thought there was going to be more to that, and then I was like, oh, that's it. That's like, okay,
it.
Well, I mean, that's quite a story.
I mean,
no
more thing to say.
Exactly. There really is. I mean, that's really it. I mean, there's not much else beyond that Tuesday, I suppose. We all have, you know, if you've ever been to an independent wrestling show or a smaller wrestling show, you always have stories, you know, and I've shared some of mine as well.
Sure.
I haven't been to very many indie shows, but you know, we all have our crazy
happen,
stories.
But...
No, neither have I, of course. I think that's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of experience there. But anyway, that'll do it for Wrestling Night in America tonight. Darren, thank you, as always, for joining me. As I said, you're my resident impact guru here on Wrestling Night in America. So before I let you go, let the listeners know where they can find your work and what you do for The Torch.
Cool. Well, thank you for having me. It's been a blast. You can find my weekly Impact recap at the Pro Wrestling Torch, and I do a podcast to recap the weekend Impact as well on the VIP side. You can find me on Twitter at Darren_Lilly. That's DARRIN_LILLY, or on Instagram at DKLSTL. Thanks for having me, and thank you for everyone who called.
Yeah, absolutely, Darren. Always a pleasure to chat with you here. And don't forget, again, I'll remind us, everybody again here, we are on the air next Saturday night after Extreme Rules. So I hope you'll call in then to talk either about Bound for Glory or Extreme Rules, or email us at wnialivecast@gmail.com. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks, tweeting recently about the firing of Wisconsin Badgers head coach Paul Christ. I'm a Wisconsin Badgers fan, and that took me quite by surprise as I was preparing to go on the air here tonight on Sunday night. So, again, join us again next weekend, Saturday night, but we like to stick with our catchphrase here on Wrestling Night in America, that if it's Sunday, it is Wrestling Night in America.